How about now? Can you hear?
We're doing fine.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, not at all. I'm so impressed.
This is
excuse me. Okay.
So there was the restoration, but also apparently you jumped right back into exercising your civic responsibilities.
Well, yes.
That's what I'd really like to talk about for the next.
Yes. I think looking back, you heard a little bit about refugees, and then there were a number of other things. Coming back into Concord, both of us were struck by the fact that no matter how much we knew about Concord, we were newcomers. So it was with a great deal of sensitivity that we sort of started to become involved. Now, our church, there's a marvelous little account of the Wheeler family. We start with the first parish, go to Tricon, Trinity Congregation, and end up over here with our Episcopal Church. So both of us became active in that, and I get on to what we call a vestry, which is this the citizen sort of representation, and get involved with several projects and that sort of thing. But it wasn't until I stumbled across the League of Women Voters request or call for help in the form of being an observer of a particular town committee and or function. And these observers would go out and sit in on the meetings. And which one could I luckily get but the library? And so I would sit back there, and the meeting of the board or the library committee would take place here, right at this table, and I would make notes, and then those notes of what transpired weren't the minutes by any means, but they would be circulated out through the League of Women Voters. That was the first stepping stone of being involved. The next thing I know, I am asked if I would be, serve on some committee. And so I go down to the town manager, Chris Whalen, and say what is available with my background, etc. And I am given a chance to go onto the board of assessors. Well, we'd had some involvement with the dynamics of the board of assessors in terms of my professional career, but not from the basics. We were looking more or less at the results of their work. So this was a wonderful experience for me. It really was. It was a good board. We had a wonderful person in the town who was the staff member for it. And I end up in the third year being the chair of the board, and we don't have any rocks thrown at us at town meeting. In fact, we even get some thanks for some things that we had done. And then I step down, and that is going to bring us pretty much to 2006. That's going to bring us to 96, 97. And then somebody comes up and says, have you ever thought of running for the Board of Selectmen? And I said, no, I've not been here. Yes, you are a candidate. So I ran and was elected. And that was, again, an extraordinary experience on my part. I've long felt, and it goes back to a wonderful book, Wind, Sand, and Stars by Antoine Saint-Exupéry, a French pilot who, in effect, laid out the flight routes along the west coast of Africa.
Can you spell his name?
Saint, Antoine, A-N-T-O-I-N-E, Saint, S-T is in French, but S-A-I-N-T, Exupéry, E-X-U-P is in Peter, E-R-Y. And his statement, I read this book in the 30s. My brother, who loved flying, this was his number one book. Sontag said, the greatness of a profession is perhaps to bring people together. And that stuck. And all those years in my professional career, that was with me, bringing people together. So when this surfaced, I was going around, you know, to run for the Board of Selectmen, and it was an extraordinary time. There were lots of things that were tension and one thing and another, but eventually in the third year, I was made chairman of the Board of Selectmen and finished up the century as chairman of the Board of Selectmen. I look back on that. At that time, my very dear aunt and uncle, Dad's first younger brother, they were leaving, and they needed a lot of help. And I just felt that I had a greater obligation to them, and so I didn't run for the second term. And sure enough, within the next 18 months, both of them have gone. But that was, I'm glad I did what I did. I'm sorry I didn't stay longer. But after that, I did a couple of committees, including one which was hilarious. We were having a great deal of trouble with the dump, our dump. And over the years, everything had been taken over there and literally dumped. And now we were trying to clean it all up. But the problem in modern science and modern work of what has happened is the residue of the decaying objects have filtered down through the sand and all that sort of thing. So I ended up being the chair of the program to create a protocol for cleaning up the dump, and I got a lot of jabs on that. Oh, I see you're in charge of the dump now, Rick. But it was. We came up with a good program. It was implemented, and the dump is regarded as having been handled in an excellent way. So that pretty much, as we entered into our present century, that pretty much was the end of the formal town involvement. There have been a number of groups that I still stay in touch with, and town meeting, of course, and the run up for that.
And all of it, and all of it has it seems guided by one of your most important agendas, which is neighborhood building.
Oh my goodness. You are truly incredible. I had forgotten that. Yes, going back to Soundtex to bring people together in Bronxville, on Cape Cod, and here, a major portion of my time after I stepped down from the Board of Selectmen goes towards the creation of a neighborhood community network throughout the town of Concord. Now, as we all recall, at the turn of the century, there were cries abounding that there was going to be some huge disaster. That when we tried to set the clocks for the new century, the world was going to collapse. And therefore, one lady had set up a program dividing Concord into neighborhoods and designating an individual for the contact point in case anything went wrong. And she put that, now that was a disaster sort of response. My concept that I had been working on from Bronxville to Cape Cod, even to here, was building a greater sense of neighborhood, that we knew our neighbor. What could we do to be of help? What could we do together? What could be that sort of thing? So I picked up her effort. And
her name was?
Diane Clymer, C-L-Y-M-E-R. diclimer. And we fused the not just the emergency aspect, but the whole aspect of knowing our neighbor, being in touch with them, doing things with them. And that went on for about 5 years.
How do you do that?
Well, what we did is that we would go around to a neighborhood and get a small group of putative leaders, right, and say, look, this is the template that we're searching for and that we're going to build. Now, will you host a meeting of everyone in your neighborhood? And we'll give the briefing on what's involved here. And what we're looking for is, yes, you're going to do an inventory of emergency preparedness. No question about that. But now we're also going to do things such as who has children, who doesn't, what can we do during the year? Can we have an annual get-together in the neighborhood? Can we put something together that we can support? And that worked. That worked. It worked very clearly under the impetus of this 2000 overhang. But nonetheless, where it worked beautifully that people knew each other. And that was the basic goal of it. Then the town got terribly interested in it because we were creating something that would interact with the town in case, and eventually it sort of got taken away from its own independent standing to be an adjunct of the town for emergency purposes. And we gave a presentation to our Massachusetts Commissioner for Emergency Preparedness, and they loved it. They loved it. Oh, they sure did. But the element that to me has always been so important, and that is that we know the neighbor. That it is not just, I'm on the phone. Oh, is there a disaster? No, I just want to make sure everything's okay. Everything okay? Haven't seen any cars going in and out of your driveway. And that took me through 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everything okay. So does the goal continue to be a security measure then?
It became predominantly a security measure.
Yeah. That wasn't necessarily foremost in your mind, though.
No.
Foremost
in my mind was bringing the people together, that they would know each other, and yes, that the security, and by knowing each other, they would be more prone and willing to share some of the in the emergency sense, that we weren't isolated. So I think I did, you're right. A lady that I had spent a great deal of time with it and had really become involved, she took over and was the liaison with our fire department. And it just sort of...
Debbie Beer?
Yeah, Debbie Beer.
I interviewed her, too.
Did you? Oh, Debbie's wonderful. She is. Yeah. We had So if whatever she said about that was where we came together at the beginning of...
It's a beautiful model. What her interview is a fantastic model for.
Well, by the time it got to, by the time Debbie took over, we were in those early years. We were in a formative process with the two. Oh yes, 2000. But we knew that was not the whole thing. It was, however, but when the fire department took over, because under state law, the fire chief is the contact point for emergency purposes. Then a whole discipline started to unfold with calls, communications, one thing and another. And that gave it a far greater sense of being. But the casualty was that the annual functions or the getting togethers or that sort of, dripped by the side. Mm. It is. It's. You know, we live in quite a different world. As I go back in my family life, we knew our neighbors. We knew them, and we lived here, and we worked here. Yes, Henry David did say with the inauguration of the train, Boston's only 2 hours away. But today, I don't know my current number that I use is 25% of the population work outside of Concord. And there's another element that we are all aware of, which was one of the principal stimuli for this program, where there are some people who buy a home and say, this is my home, stay away. And there they are. They don't want to be part of the community. They don't want to be, they just want to have their own personal privacy. And yet, in situations where there can be a disaster, that is probably one of the saddest things, that wall that they built around them. And we did run into that. Don't bother me. We're not bothering you. We're trying to be here to help you.
How do you deal with that from a development standpoint, as property is redefined and bigger homes with bigger fences are built? Is there any sort of a recourse or a conversation to have with people?
I think we have to go and meet and sit with the people themselves and say that this is not intrusive. Now, that's difficult because, in effect, we're saying that we want the privilege of being able to alert you in case there is some incipient or growing disaster, man or nature, emerging. Number two, we are not going to be intrusive in your lives. Number three, we will be able to give you information about the kind of things that you should have on hand. But fundamentally, we are here as an adjunct and a resource for you. And if something happens, then here's the structure. And I think some people may dismiss it totally. Some may dismiss it and then ponder on it and say, wait, now hold on. This is something good to know. Yeah. So, yes, that was a great deal of the first five. But Bronxville in New York, the Cape, we only have about 40 houses on the road, but we all still to this day are working together so closely. Mm-hmm. It is. Well, I thank you both for coming so far. And yes, and you carry away a great deal of respect. And I don't know, there are things about our family. Yes, we were not one of the very first. We came over 2 years later, but we've been here, and to continue to be here is so meaningful for me that I can be. And so I want to thank you for your time. Now, it wouldn't be possible just to go bang up the street to take a look?
I just wanted to thank you for your words and your passion and carrying the family history and the meaning of the legacy.